Hello, my name is Caroline Mayle. I'm currently a programme director at the University of Hull for the Mental Health Nursing BSc. My background is registered nurse in mental health and health visiting. A little bit more about this phenomena that I've described on the poster. We've looked at this as an emerging theoretical concept in the light of the changes in society, where recovery and future planning means something more proactive and more sustainable, more meaningful for people in society. And with that, this brings our students into being more diverse and coming with lots of experiences of their own, particularly experiences of mental health and mental distress. I was faced with this issue when I had a student enrol who was a previous service user that I'd worked alongside and been part of their care episodes with. And I started to think about the relationship and the power changes and differences that take place when when our roles change in life. I wondered what they may make of the new relationship with me, and whether they had questions, and how might I feel if I was still in practice? How might I feel if I was the nurse who was to take a student who had previously been their service user? What type of things might I think and feel? I started to really relive the care experience and started to remember some of those tricky and challenging times through that person's care episode. I wondered what they might think of now, and actually, what do I think about that? I was fearful of the unknown. I couldn't really make too much sense of it without seeking some support and guidance from a colleague. And I wanted to know whether other people had encountered this. So after some more reflection and thinking about this potential issue, I took some supervision with my mentor, and they suggested contacting the Mental Health Nurse Academic UK forum for their views and experiences, and ask the questions: what experiences they have on this concept, how do they manage these situations and issues in their academic life, and whether they'd come across any literature or be interested in taking part in some further knowledge work and understanding around this. When we discussed and we met, we found that a number of other academics had similar conversations with clinicians and encountered ex-service users becoming students. And they too came with mixed emotions and thoughts and didn't quite know where or why or how they felt. We saw that there was no repository of good practice and little evidence on what practice assessors practice supervisors think and feel, and to not acknowledge this or not to explore this further may be not giving any validation or accreditation to the complex trains of thoughts that we're often exposed to in these types of professions, and how we manage personal values, ethical dilemmas. Why wouldn't we start opening up some of that discussion and thinking to those affected? Shortly after that, the call came from practice, and they had been assigned a student who had been a service user. And that was really an opportunity for me to then go in and explore and spend some time with a practice assessor and practice supervisor by understanding their experience of when they knew the student as a service user, and really focusing upon how this made them feel, what were their concerns. So we did a lot of exploration, we did a lot of reframing of emotions, and it took on organically became quite a psychotherapeutic environment with some supervision and lots of room for talking in using our own words without fear of retribution or fear of being seen as judgmental. And that was one of the things that came out, is that the practice assessor and practice supervisor felt that they were caught between a rock and a hard place, caught between their professional values and their personal understanding and experience of that person when they were unwell. When we came to evaluate, we found that we could label this as an action learning cycle. We reframed some of those uncomfortable emotions through validation and reflection. We discussed possible outcomes and how to address these and what might work and what might not work so well. And we decided that actually sometimes clinical supervision may not meet the needs to discuss some of these more complex thought processes that we go through. That they really greatly appreciated the time that we'd had to focus upon themselves, but they still struggled again with having some of those conversations without the student present. But acknowledged that the time spent in a trusting environment was really valuable to them and how that shaped their practice, and to remind them actually essentially of what recovery really does look like. So we continued to make some recommendations based on our conversations, and that's one of those is about spaces being created for nurses to discuss their thoughts and feelings without fear of judgment. Recognising that their own experiences of working in a psychologically harmful environment at times, as we often do in mental health nursing, and it can be very emotionally challenging, that a space should be created to discuss that further and focus particularly on what that clinician might be going through and some of the questions that they might have about how they assess and engage effectively, free of transferring or affecting the practitioner-assessor relationship. There was a thought around a repository of good practice and how interventions could be evidence and what access is needed to support supervision, and how some formal research could show us and identify any themes around thoughts and feelings of practitioners experiencing this. The reason that this has come about now is that, again, the landscape of our community is changing. How we see, how we envisage our life, we've moved very much on from recovery being stable, medicated, staying in your lane, if you like, not having ideas and aspirations that would allow you to bring your experience and use that for the wealth of others in a really transformative way. And so we recognise there's a lot more work to do around this, but it might be useful to think about where we do sit along these lines. Are we really accepting of each other? Are we very quick to cancel out other people based on our own experiences with that person? And where does that leave us as professionals? So I leave you to ponder some of those philosophical questions and take that thinking wherever you see fit. The next part of this recording is with some people that have been involved with this emerging theory and helped with the development of this. I'd ask you to listen without judgment, and to embrace their story and experience for what it is. Thank you.
Sound effects.
Yeah. Hi, Keith. My name's...
Hiya.
Good to meet you this morning. This morning I'm with Dr. Keith Ford, a senior lecturer of mental health nursing over at York University. Thanks for meeting with me today.
No problem.
Keith and I met when I put a call out to the Mental Health Nurse Academic UK forum, asking for academic experiences of when students become service users, and whether they knew or had any practitioners that came to them with their thoughts and feelings about that, based on the information that I've described in the poster. So, and myself and Keith's been a loyal attendee of the forum. He's been turning up every time I've put a network meeting on, and we've had lots of philosophical discussions about the whys and wherefores and where this might lead to. Keith, would you like to talk now a little bit about the sort of things that we were hoping to write and some of the obstacles that we came across when we were talking about that?
Yeah, certainly. I think from the outset it captured my interest because, you know, you do see people and a rise in the number of students who come onto courses like nursing that have got previous mental health issues or conditions or even ongoing conditions and issues. And thinking about it in a kind of objective and thorough way, you know, the impact that that has on themselves and the workforce that they're working with, and also the client group that they're there to be kind of working with as well. So there was a lot of thoughts that came about, well, is it right? Is it wrong? And we're not here to judge, but it's kind of wrestling with those kind of feelings that you might have, and almost being appreciative that those feelings are real for some people.
Yes.
That, you know, as the discussion we've had, that, you know, you might get a student that's been an inpatient on a unit or an area where they're going in to be a student nurse, and what are the implications for that?
Yeah.
So it's not so much about trying to stop them from going into the profession or kind of over assessing them, as we've kind of used that term as well. It's about how do we make it a safe environment for all concerned, because we know the benefits regarding empathy from people that have endured and gone through mental health experiences themselves, and the value that can bring to the service. But it's how we use that and how close sometimes we might come to abusing it, or whether we cause more problems than we might be solving.
I
feel as if I'm just kind of making it sound more confusing by talking like this, but I think that kind of epitomizes where we are with our discussions.
It's the nature of those ethical debates sometimes, is it doesn't come out as with clarity. And we've discovered that through our conversations, haven't we? There's lots of add-ons to this issue, which sometimes we take a bit for granted, I think. And I wonder if mental health nurses are really ready, because of some of the conversations that we've had with practitioners about their own thoughts and feelings when they're faced with, you know, that we talked about power differentiation maybe, and how that's not a dirty word, power, but it's when... When you've been involved in a relationship that's been really emotionally challenging, and then the dynamics change to the point where you're their counterparts, and that's something that we don't know yet, do we? And whether that is an actual, or how to look at it and how to support somebody who's experienced that type of relational harm.
Yeah, I think, I think the conclusion we were coming to, if we were anywhere near a conclusion, was about treating everybody independently and differently, because we're going to come across students, some of which we'll be able to manage with very little input, but still feel they might need to disclose the experiences they've had, and others might be still going through some turmoil and not want to disclose, but it might be that the staff they're working with discover that there's issues there, and the difficulties of how you raise that tactfully. Yeah. And I think in the idea that we might write this up, I certainly felt as if I was treading on eggshells in a way that I don't want to be seen staunch for or against.
No.
Or it is very much kind of there to be appraised, really, on an individual basis. It's a tough one. Because I think as mental health nurses, we should know, or we deem to think we should know better, or
absolutely
have insight into how to deal with this. But it's different when it becomes a colleague, or even as a practice assessor, you've got responsibility for a student who might not meet the criteria.
Yes.
But because it's a mental health issue in a mental health scenario, it kind of adds to the complexity of the whole situation for me. It's a tough one. It's been difficult to know where to position myself in terms of how to write. Mm. But what I would like to do ultimately is raise awareness that this seems to be an increasing issue, that we do get student nurses coming onto the course that, you know, are at different stages of development,
yeah,
different stages of recovery. And therefore, you know, we can't use blanket cover. We can't,
no,
you know, there's no one cure for all, as we know, within our practice areas. But it's the same with working with the students.
Yeah.
You know, allowing them to develop. But where would you call it if they weren't developing and they weren't meeting
absolutely,
the criteria?
Yeah.
It's a tough call.
The goalposts of personal supervisors, practice assessors, academic assessors, the boundaries or set job descriptions, if you like, are really broadening, aren't they, because of the diversity of the students we've got. And that's something we don't really understand about. Yeah. And I think that's what you're trying to say, is that those, we're not, we'll be a practice assessor for a student. When do we become their, a little step over, or notice that they, that somebody might be experiencing some mental distress? What do we do in that situation?
Yeah.
And it changes those boundaries of what we've always known. And maybe like the hierarchical structure, the invisible hierarchy of, like, I'm the practice assessor, you're the student, you know, that sort of thing. And yeah, so it's something that I think we need to explore more to try and be really helpful, like you say, for everybody, not to exclude anybody. Yeah.
I think that's the key, because if I read something that was a bit staunchly one track either way,
yeah,
I would think, well, you're not considering the other bits. So I think the exploration and the untangling of what's going on is, I guess we're going through a process really to discover, and perhaps, you know, somewhere down the line we need to talk to the people that the you know, the group that this is affecting, or that are affected by this, and have some, you know, really heartfelt, open and honest conversations about the difficulties from both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's really great. Thanks, Keith. I really appreciate your input into this podcast. And yeah, thank you. Hope you keep continuing to meet with me and we get this right and actually finish, because it would be really good to actually get something on pen onto paper. But because it's an exploration, we're still at that talking about it side, and you know, we've got, time is on our side a little bit, I think. So thank you very much. Thank you.
No problem. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Good morning, Paula. Thanks for joining me today. Paula's a mental health nurse and practice assessor who has really helped me to develop my understanding in what some assessors might think and feel when they get a student who was a previous service user. So thanks for joining me this morning, Paula.
You're welcome.
So Paula, just when we worked together, when we sort of had this scenario in practice, and I as the lecturer was supporting, helping for that transition for the student to come into your area, at your service area, can you just talk to me a little bit about some of the things that were going through your head as a practice assessor? And we also had somebody else there who's not here with us today, was a practice supervisor, didn't we? But some of the discussions that you were having through supervision and reflection.
I think initially, I've not actually worked with this particular person, but a colleague of mine had, and people knew a lot about her. She was one of those patients that people hear about because of possibly some of the things that she possibly done in the past. And so everybody was a little bit anxious about her coming. My other colleague was particularly anxious because she'd been in tribunals with her, and she was worried how she would cope with that. My main worry was a little bit like, well, this might sound a bit awful, but was, you know, what she's going to know things about me. Normally when I'm working with students, I'll tell them a bit about myself. I'll you know, we'll talk about family, things like that. You know, you're not guarded. Whereas I felt like I was going to have to be a bit more guarded with this particular student, maybe not even be on social media, that kind of thing. So they were the things initially that we were thinking about. But I was hoping that we could get her to come to us and make a change, really, and why shouldn't she be a nurse? Why shouldn't she? She's in the best position to become a nurse, because she's experienced it all firsthand. She's been in acute unit. She's had treatment. She's had some restrictive interventions that she's probably been, you know, had been exposed to. And I thought we could do some really good work with her, and I was hoping that, you know, we could really help her to progress, basically, and give her some purpose and something to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're clearly describing this sort of discussion that you're having in between your personal values and sort of some of the things that you're thinking of feeling as a person and your professional knowing, your professional knowledge about recovery and the value of lived experience. And and I don't think we're alone in that. We have those sort of similar sort of patterns of thought. And the episode of Care had been quite emotionally charged for this student when they were back as a service user. And there's something about that changing relationship, isn't there? And we talked a little bit about team dynamics and how you, as a senior position within the team, might manage some of that if there was discussion.
Yeah. And there was like a little bit of conflict, really, because some were saying, no, she shouldn't come here.
Mm-hmm.
And some was, and then others was like, well, why not? So that initially that was the first thing. It was like, you know, she should go out of area to do a study in. She shouldn't be coming in a place where she's, you know, where people know her and that she's had experiences.
Yeah.
But then again, then that you start thinking about the stigma. Why shouldn't she? You know, we're trying to reduce the stigma in mental health. Mm. We're trying to, you know, we're all susceptible to being poorly at some point in our lives. Why shouldn't she have the same rights as everybody else?
Absolutely.
And have the right to study?
And it opened up that bit of discussion, really, didn't it? The conflict started, but then it opened up I felt that we got some really healthy discussion out of what we were talking about. It started off as that sort of like confused, lots of opinions, lots of thinking, lots of feelings going on. And as we talked about it, it became more balanced and more achievable for everybody, I think.
And obviously, once I met her and I was really open and honest with her, it was easier to work with her then because I had a face to the name and she was quite open about certain things. And she'd said, you know, she'd said, the main thing that she said to me, where it really affected me, was, I don't want to be that person anymore.
Yeah.
And that's when I just thought, right, we'll try and get through this as best we can. We'll do our utmost, you know, to try and get her through the training at once. You know, to throw out a placement, basically, not training. But
and it sounds like those conversations were really open and transparent, because when we work with the student as well, we inform the student about what was happening and just not the content of the discussions, but actually looking at sort of insight from everybody about this, because where we live is quite insular, I would say. Lots of people know each other in the different there's one main trust. So lots of people and lots of people rotate, don't they, in the trust. And so you get to know not just service users, but lots of staff from working different in places. And actually sometimes the only way to be is really open and transparent is like rip that plaster off.
Yeah.
If you like, you can go, look, we need to have an uncomfortable conversation.
And she coped with it really well, actually.
She did.
Because, you know, we initially spoke to her about things that she might see, you know, the restrictive practices, you know, and things like that, like restraint or seclusion, that kind of thing. Things that she's possibly experienced.
Mm.
But she was okay about it, and she was, you know, she did actually say, I don't know how I'm going to feel until I see it. So,
And I think that's really reasonable, because none of us sometimes like no, do we? So thinking about then how it moved your thinking on as a practice assessor in the team, when we had our final sort of meet, you said about you felt really quite proud of how people had reacted. And
absolutely, yeah. I think initially a lot of the sort of the nursing assistants didn't know who she was, but then people sort of got to know. I don't know how they got to know, but they did get to know. And everybody absolutely loved her. They all helped her. They rallied around. They actually she didn't need that much help. She was was good. She was brilliant with the patients. She had really good interpersonal skills. And everybody loved her, to be honest. And it is a shame that, you know, things didn't work out the way that, you know, we wanted, but and she relapsed, but yeah, I think the team were proud of what we all did really well with her, and I think she probably got more than what another student might get there, you know, like.
All right, interesting. What do you mean?
Because obviously, I guess in a way, like we've spoke about before, the lines are skewed a little bit. So I felt at some points that I was actually a CPN sometimes. Do you know, she'd confide in me sometimes about things, about her mental health. And I think...
Sort of a blurring of the boundaries, do you think? Of what we currently know. I mean, currently understand as our role as practice assessors and practice supervisors, you feel like it got a bit more blurred than it normally would have. A few years ago, we wouldn't maybe have had this sort of. Yeah.
So we agreed that we would have supervision as well as all our, you know, our interviews.
Yeah.
Every week, so that we could talk about it. But then obviously she'd talk about her mental health in that. So like at one point she said to me that she wanted to come off her medications because she was worried about she had some side effects from the medication she was on, and she said, no, I'm not supposed to talk to you about it. But obviously, I advised her not to come off her medications, to speak to her own CPN.
Yeah.
She did know that she wasn't supposed to speak to me about these things, but then I wasn't gonna. At the same time, I was overseeing that she was safe as well, so. Yeah. That was what I found the most difficult, really, was because obviously our patients are vulnerable.
Yeah.
I had to make sure they were safe around her.
Yes, there's an element of the boundary of assessment being not as clear as it usually would be, because you're just, and as we would do for our colleagues, you're watching out for them, aren't you? You know, sometimes you know colleagues not particularly feeling too great in themselves, you've always got like an ear, you know, trusty colleague, you're near to the ground, you just start checking in, are you okay? You know, is there anything I can do to help or something, I suppose. But it's that extending that to the student is quite a different role. I think we usually hold our students in quite high regard. So they, you know, we expect a lot of them, don't we, in terms of assessment,
etc. I spoke to her a bit more than I would any normal student. I was like, probably because I was more aware of her. Other students, you'd let them go, don't you, on the ward, and you say, you know, go speak to the patients. And then I think with her a little bit, I was a bit more like, oh, come with me, we'll do this. And I was a bit more, which is a good thing, because I should be more like that anyway. But, you know, when within your daily shift, you don't always think, oh, I better take that student with me, do you?
No.
I think I was more aware of taking her with me and getting her to experience things. Yeah. And then to observe
safety.
Her.
In safety,
yeah,
it's sort of just a bit more of a safe approach for her, and I think you're right. Like, you make a good point of like, oh, we should all be like that with all students, but we do gauge students independently, don't we? So you know, you sort of have that initial conversation with students, you sort of get a feel for their level of autonomy and their level of understanding and where their confidence, if you like, of being somewhere. I know certainly I've had students before where they've had no experience of a ward, so I've particularly got them by my side for quite a little bit, just so checking in, you okay with that, what did you make of that situation, how do you feel about doing this, and that's, you know,
I definitely felt like I had to do that more
with
this first student, really, than what I would with the others.
And what do you think going forward, is there anything that you think that you would do differently with another student, similar situation, or is there anything that you're definitely going to take forward as good practice that you think, yeah, that really worked, I'm really happy with how that was, and or have any more questions, any more sort of, is this regurgitated more thoughts and feelings that you're not quite aware of yet?
I think we maybe need to be a bit more structured with it, because that was the main thing that I thought about, it was that the boundaries were skewed, and I was always really aware that when she was talking to me about her mental health, you know, you don't get to know all your students' mental health details. We don't know that, but so sometimes I did feel a little bit overwhelmed towards the end. But obviously, she was relapsing towards the end. Right. So I was a little bit like, because the last day that I saw her, she said something about being that she thought somebody was going to kill her.
Right.
So then it was a bit like, oh, God, what do I do with that? And I'd just come off a night shift, so we were passing because she didn't work nights with me. And it was a bit like, so I had to tell the qualifieds that day just to keep an eye on her. And then obviously things progressed and she didn't come back.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's quite a responsibility in that way because I felt a little bit responsible for her mental health as well.
Yeah.
At times. So. Yeah.
And that I suppose that knowledge came quite early in the relationship. And sometimes just as people, even colleagues that we haven't worked with for very long, we wouldn't maybe disclose so much so quickly.
No, that's it.
Yeah, takes a bit of time sometimes, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And you definitely won't get to know all these things about other students. And I felt very protective of her.
Yeah.
But then that's my personality as well,
yeah,
isn't it?
Of course,
you know, I'm quite a caring, nurturing person. So I think, you know, maybe we should be more structured, more bounded a little bit somehow, but not. Obviously, you've still got to talk about it, but maybe I should have been a bit more bounded with her, I think, maybe.
I mean, but you did set out stuff, didn't you? Because you talked about, I think we both had that conversation with a student about knowing and understanding relapse and where to go to and, like, how to seek support. Like, have you got a relapse signature? Like, what do you understand? What, you know, to sort of use a, you know, sort of a jargony word, insight, you know, into your own mental health. And so we did that level of checking out, but there's some responsibility goes back to the adult, doesn't it? Of like, that's up to them and that's up to you and I'm okay, you're okay. We work on that assumption. But when things get a bit skewed, it's really hard to work through that.
Yeah, it was sometimes.
Well, someone's not okay, but I don't really know. What's my responsibility here?
yeah, that was it. Like, you know, when she said that, I sort of went home, so I've been on a night shift and I'm thinking, do I need to contact her CPN?
Yeah.
Do you know, but then that's about confidentiality. But then I thought, she's got to be safe because she's got to be safe as a nurse. And by the end of it, it was all taken out of my hands because she didn't come back to the placement.
Yeah.
That was my thought process, is how am I going to escalate this? Mm. Obviously, I would have arranged a meeting with you. But it was, you know, it's knowing when to do them things.
Yeah.
And should have become really psychotic while she was with the patient, our patients, which are elderly, you know, would she have been safe with them? That's all I kept thinking was, you know.
Yeah, I get it. So do you think in terms of support, we sort of ended up doing what we call an action learning cycle, didn't we, which is where we met and we set some boundaries, we looked at what the needs of yourself were, and we looked at what might be the issues, and we set meetings up, regular points to avoid a crisis point for you and the team.
Yeah. Really supportive, though. That was good.
Oh, okay, good, that's good. Yeah. And I think that's going to be my question, really, is do you think that sort of system might help?
Absolutely. Yeah. With somebody she was a complex student once.
Yeah.
I suppose they will all be as complex as her. They have different variety of mental health problems, don't they?
Yeah.
But absolutely, that did help. To have that support and to be able to talk about it, really.
Yeah.
When I was getting a little bit, you know, like I said, when I was a bit, when the boundaries were crossing and I was really cool, what do we here, sort of thing, it was good to have that support network, really.
Excellent.
But then again, like I said, it also felt a little bit like we were talking about her, and maybe I questioned a few times whether she should be present.
Yeah.
But then the supervision was kind of more about me and my feelings, so again, the boundaries just kept skewing all the time.
And that's really important, because we are people with feelings and thoughts of ourselves, aren't we? Before we're mental health nurses, we're people with thoughts and feelings, and we're going to wrestle with some of that, aren't we?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. But no, it was definitely, the support was brilliant that we got. I think, you know, going forward, if I get another student, that'll be great. And I think next time I've got a bit more insight into it, so
I'll
be a bit more prepared.
Yeah.
So,
excellent. Cheers, Paula. Thanks so much for meeting with me this morning, because that was really insightful, and I really thank you for talking to me about your experience.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay, good morning, Beth. Morning. Thanks for joining me today. Beth is a third year mental health nursing student at the university, or just coming into your third year. and one of my personal supervisees. Over supervision, we talked about Beth's lived experience and her development through her nursing program and where she felt she'd progressed and how she's, you know, manoeuvred and made her way through this tricky time of nursing education. And you can't see us, but we're sort of having a smile at that because we both know how hard it's been going through COVID and alongside living with different things in society, you know, where we're okay to speak about our lived experiences and things like that. So Beth, thank you. If you'd like to start by just coming back a bit to when we first met and we talked about your experience, take it from the beginning and then we can sort of see where that went.
Yeah, so now you're asking. So coming in to, obviously we're doing mental health nursing, coming into that, because of my diagnosis, I kind of thought I had to sort of announce it, maybe, to like professionals that I was working with, so staff at the university, staff on placement, with like nursing staff and things, so that they sort of knew what to expect. Okay. Because I think that I was under the impression that there's a lot of negative behaviours that are associated with somebody who has a personality disorder.
Yeah.
And if they sort of sneak through the cracks and they come out a little bit, if I get a bit snappy when I'm stressed or I don't cope with a stressful situation on the ward like what everybody else did, I think my diagnosis was almost an excuse for me at the beginning.
You're trying to justify yourself in some way, maybe, and just trying to sort of like put it out there.
So I was just sort of, I'd sort of announce it to people and I'd be like, so this is what I've got. So if I'm a bit of a drama queen, that's maybe why. And then sort of as I've gone on, because there is a lot of sort of negative connotations in healthcare about this diagnosis, I sort of realised maybe I shouldn't be announcing that. And then I got really comfortable with it. So it's not a label anymore. I don't have to put a sticker on and be like, I have this.
Yeah.
This is what I've got.
Like maybe sometimes, like when you stand up for yourself and you are an advocate or you challenge, that's part of who you are and not a diagnosis almost. It's like, actually, wait a minute. That's what I was, as a nurse, that's what I can do. I can say, actually, is that the right thing to do?
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of just stopped wearing it as a label and now I'm just really comfortable with it. Now it's just, I'm just a bit loud mouth. That's kind of what comes with it now.
I know there's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. It's not like a negative thing. It's just part of me now. It's not a definition of who I am. So I've stopped sort of announcing it.
Tell me what happened when you were on placement and you were in an acute ward, weren't you?
I was.
Yeah. Tell me about that experience for you and what happened there.
So it was, obviously, first year, our first in-person placement, it was my first day on the ward and I had been on the ward for 5 minutes. Literally 5 minutes. We were still doing the induction around the ward. And there was a member of staff that was being very aggressively negative about people with the same diagnosis that I had. Granted, there is a difference between functioning personality disorder and non-functioning, but at the time I didn't differentiate between the two. So when she was sort of slagging off people with PD, I kind of took that as a little bit of an attack, as you maybe would when you've not been around it. So she was saying sort of things like, we have too many of them on the ward, we need to get rid of some of them, they're really problematic, calling them really derogatory names, and I got my back up a little bit. And it ended up that it had gone to the matron that was on the ward, and then it became an issue, and then it became a whole thing. And it was first day of placement, and I'd just caused a problem already because somebody had been, you know, slagging off a diagnosis, and I got my back up. So it did cause a problem sort of going forward.
But bear in mind, you're in your first placement.
Yeah.
Like your first real opportunity to sort of exercise some of those professional behaviours that we try and get at university. It's difficult to navigate, isn't it? Because since then you've had other experiences, haven't you? And they've not been as challenging for you in terms of like how you've handled that. And I think I remember saying to you in supervision, like, that's
because you're growing in your development as a nurse and your confidence, and that's a really excellent thing that you should feel really good about yourself for.
Yeah.
And then there was a time when, was it the same ward? I can't remember, but there was a patient and there was a bit of a situation happening and you were there as well. And I think you remember, I remember you telling me that about the assessment, you felt like you were being watched or because of they knew about your diagnosis.
So that was the same ward, but has happened on multiple.
Right, okay.
It actually happened to me yesterday.
Wow.
So it does happen quite a lot. So we were doing the assessment of it. There was a bit of high activity going on the ward, but we were doing an assessment of a patient who had the same diagnosis that I did.
Okay.
She was very clearly struggling, a lot of very like negative behaviours towards herself. Yeah. And she was a bit of a risk patient. She did, you know, harm herself on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And as we were doing the assessment, obviously this was discussed. And it was also known that I had the same diagnosis. So then they were very wary about what they would and wouldn't let me listen to.
How did you know that? How did that conversation transpire for you to understand that was happening?
So I pick up on subtleties quite quickly, and we were in the middle of the assessment and I knew where the conversation was going.
Yeah.
And the nurse that I was with was like, oh, would you mind just popping to the office for me and just checking this?
Okay.
Would you mind? And then she did that twice whilst we were trying to do the assessment, which I think that got my back up a bit more because I thought that was a bit unfair for the patient that we were trying to do the assessment for.
And you're a grown-up, so sometimes you pick up on these things. Like, you're an adult. Yeah. Like, we're all adults, and you just have that feeling of, like, what's going on here? Yeah.
Yeah, and then it was outright blatantly said by the end of the assessment because the patient was about to start talking about these self-deprecating behaviours.
Okay.
And the nurse sort of looked at me and then looked at her and went, how about we discuss this later in private?
Okay, did you challenge the nurse on that afterwards, Beth? Were you able to challenge them? Or, I mean, what happened for you after that? I mean, because that's a really powerful situation to be involved in.
So I feel like if you'd asked me that from yesterday's, I'd have challenged the nurse.
Yeah.
But I very much hadn't got a handle on my diagnosis when I first started this course, when that happened.
Yeah.
So I just went into shutdown.
Okay, and that was the same yesterday as well, you wanted to shut down or...?
My brain tried to, and I pushed through it.
Okay,
deal with this better.
Yeah, this isn't about you, it's about them, yeah.
Yeah, but we'd had a situation yesterday that a patient had harmed themselves, and they were PD.
Okay.
And as we'd left the room, the nurse sort of looked at me and went, you're all right, you're not triggered or anything. And I was just like, okay, I'm fine, thank you.
Was that how it was said? Because, like, there's a nice way to say that if you're checking in with someone, isn't there? There's, like, a sort of, like I understand everything you're going through. Is you okay with what you've just seen? Like, we would do for our colleagues, you know, if we were in a tricky situation. I mean, like, but sort of saying, oh, are you triggered? Like, really sort of, was it a nonchalant way or was it a, you know, how did that happen? I've got visions in my mind, but tell me how that happened.
No, word for word, I got one of the typical puppy eye, real sympathetic looks that people give you, and I got, that didn't trigger you or anything, did it?
Okay.
So I got where she was coming from, but I was like, no, it did not trigger me. Yes, I'm aware she has the fake diagnosis.
Mm.
Thank you. I'm going to go get a cup of tea. Would you like one?
Yeah.
But in this sort of original, I didn't challenge the nurse.
No. Well, you were quite new. You were very new. Okay. So there was like that hierarchy.
Yeah.
Like you sort of thinking, I need to get through this placement. I'm a junior student. I just got to. Yeah.
And I was very hyper aware when I first started this course that as open as I was about my diagnosis, I wasn't okay with it yet. So situation like this, I wasn't sure if I was going to handle it very professionally or if it would come across immature. And so with her being a band 7, I just didn't. I just shut down.
And I think actually, like, that's a really insightful thinking because, you know, you're not quite sure. So what you did was freeze and you reflected on that and you didn't react. And that's like, I mean, for anyone who's being confronted with something like that, whether they've got a diagnosis or not, that's the most we can expect from ourselves is that we don't just go, and have a load off and react. But and there's been times when I've wanted to, you know.
I did when I got home.
Yeah.
When I got home. My flatmate got the bug and I was like,
bah, bah, bah.
I got home raging when I was done. But on the face of it, I was just like, okay, thank you for your consideration. And then went and took my break for 20 minutes because I was like, good. No, I need to go chill.
Good. Do you sort of see where sometimes, like, practitioners are coming from? Because I know we'd had that conversation as well, and you've decided that you won't talk about your diagnosis, but that's maybe because you're concerned about the overassessment and you want to be seen as yourself now. You like you said, you don't need to wear it on your sleeve. It's part of you, but it's not you. You're developing and growing as a person.
Yeah, so I like to think that I have a very strong work ethic. I will find a job that you need me to do, and I'll just go and do it. And I'll keep myself really, really busy. And I know that that can be sort of detrimental to somebody with a PD. If they keep themselves too busy, sometimes they can sort of implode on themselves.
Yeah.
And the ward that I've just been on, they're brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. I want a job there, but I didn't tell them initially until right at the end.
Good. Right.
And we had a patient with the same diagnosis. And energies bounce.
Yeah, of course they do.
Especially PD energy.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So we bounced, myself and this patient, we bounced, but not positively.
Okay.
We didn't get on at all.
Yeah.
She really didn't like me. And quite honestly, I didn't have the time of day for her.
Yeah, as a person, she wasn't. Maybe you just not, you would never have that person in your life. They're not. Yeah.
But obviously, we kept it professional. So I was still, you know, do you need a cup of tea? Do you need a bath? What do you need? Sort of thing. I wasn't in any way sort of neglectful of her.
Did you access supervision for those uncomfortable thoughts and feelings? Do you have any support with that?
So I did at the end. I wasn't going to originally because I thought it made me look a little bit unprofessional.
Because
obviously you can't really, I don't know, in my brain going, can I have a supervision please? Because I really don't like one of your patients.
Right.
Wasn't something that kind of crossed in my brain. There was like a wall there and I was like, no, we can't do that.
Yeah.
You're a nurse. You have to be professional.
Yeah.
But I'd mentioned it to my supervisor and she suggested that we had a supervision. So we did. And we sat and talked about it and we kind of realised it is normal not to like a patient.
Yeah.
And PD energy does bounce, but she had admitted that she didn't actually realise I had it at all.
How did you feel with that? Was that what did that do for you? Any good, bad?
That was an achievement. That was an achievement.
You were just like, I am myself. Look, I'm no longer just a label, like I am Beth. Yeah.
Yeah. I think because I'd spent so long putting myself under the label, the fact that I hadn't said anything and then when I had, this particular person had gone, I didn't even realise, you know, and I was like, oh, did you not? Okay. So it did work out, and it's easier to deal with once you're comfortable with it, but you're also comfortable with your professional abilities. So I feel like as I'm going
on, of course,
I'm going to continue to feel better about it because I'm more confident in my nursing than I am in how I handle my PD.
Yeah, absolutely. I get that. Yeah, you can put your hats on. Clearly, you've got a hat for this and a hat for that, and that feels okay. You're not compartmentalising it to your detriment. You're able just to access what you need to at the time, and it's code switching. So you're just going into an environment and you're fitting in straight away, chameleon-like, and just doing that. And it's interesting what you say about, like, you didn't feel okay with having supervision, because that's part of when I've showed you the poster, there's bits on it about is supervision adequate enough to talk about these thoughts and feelings that we have about our patients, you know?
Yeah.
And whether we've got a diagnosis or not, or we're the service user, I mean, that's something that's connected, I think. And I do think that sometimes we don't take stuff to supervision. Well, I haven't. And it depends on the supervisor that I've had.
Yeah,
and the relationship, you know, like all of those things.
It very much depends on the staff member.
Yeah.
There's certain staff members on that ward I absolutely wouldn't have said that to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we don't have allies everywhere that we think we have when we first start nursing. And so from that, what do you think? Do you think now you would take something like that to supervision a bit earlier so that you didn't feel so affected by those relationships, or try to work things out so that it didn't reach a point where you were questioning your nursing abilities and...
Yeah, so I think one thing I've developed as we've been going on is coping mechanisms. I think they're really important for me, and they didn't work for that situation.
Right.
So I was coming home feeling really neglectful.
Yeah, affected by your interactions. Like you had that feeling of like, I'm being neglectful here because I can't meet this patient in the middle and be the person that I want to be. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want her care from me to suffer.
Yeah.
Because my brain didn't function with her.
Yeah.
So I was coming home feeling really, really guilty about it. So yeah, I think I would go a lot sooner just to sort of clear the air, because I was very much overcompensating for that patient then. Yeah. Because my brain thought we weren't doing enough, so then we did too much, and it ended up backfiring.
Yeah, yeah.
She became really, really dependent.
Of course.
And then I left. So.
Yeah, there were no boundaries in that relationship, and then you still rumbled along with that, and maybe that patient has too. Yeah. Gosh, that's so insightful, Beth. You're such a, you are. You know what? Your reflective skills are just a really breath of fresh air to hear and listen to. Now you're doing a little, yes, look at me. And that's fine. We should feel good in ourselves when we have those moments of like epiphanies, clarity, whatever, like that little bit of it. That's what I think keeps us going on a really spiritual, grounded level, regardless of what the gold standard evidence says. That's what makes us who we are and good practitioners. And
100%. Yeah.
Thank you, Beth. That's been a really lovely conversation, and thanks for sitting with me this morning and recording that as part of the poster. We'll meet up for supervision again, obviously. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.